Well, we'll be in 2 Peter tonight, the book of 2 Peter, picking up where Pastor Paul left off last week in 2 Peter chapter 1. You know, research has shown that when a man is released from prison after years of incarceration, he has some real obstacles to overcome. Simple things like choosing what to eat, when to go to sleep, when to wake up, what to do with his free time. These can all be very overwhelming to such a man because he's so used to somebody telling him what to do every moment of the day because his life has just been regimented for so many years. And then everyday functions like crossing a busy street or driving a car or learning to navigate the internet are skills that have to be learned, and a man finds that he fumbles at such things that the rest of us just take for granted. And the new way of life proves so overwhelmingly challenging that soon the old way of life is sought after again. So is it any wonder that within 5 years, 76% of parolees are rearrested? Freedom from sin can be the same way. People have this idea that the world and its ways are vast, but the ways of the Lord are confining and small. Folks, it's the exact opposite is true. It's the sinful, worldly ways that prove to be confining and a small prison, but the kingdom of God is great. So much so that many new Christians feel overwhelmed and don't know what to do when they get into that new world. When you accept Christ as Savior, you're actually released from a small prison and set loose in a very large, vast world. And so for the believer who is now free, living, or better yet, soaring in that kingdom requires training, requires work, requires diligence, it requires an entire new skill set than one ever needed for living in the world. Sadly, I find many believers either stop putting in the effort or never really start in the first place, and they resort back to that old way of living as if still imprisoned by sin, when in fact they're not. So in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 9, looking ahead, he says, "For he who lacks these things is short-sighted even to blindness and has forgotten that he was cleansed from his old sins." Just what are the things in verse 9? These things, well, those are the new skills that require work and training and diligence to acquire, okay? Now listen, sin is really easy to jump into, for sure. But have you noticed, we get good at sinning. We get skilled at it. Right? Well, in Jesus Christ, by his grace, you can learn a whole new set of skills. The kind of skills that produce, whereas the skills of sin produce consequences, the skills of righteous living produce results. Right? Now, I must add this. These skills do not result in salvation. Can't stress that enough. Salvation results in learning these new skills. Right? Once you're saved, God gives you what you need to develop these skills of righteous living. So in verse 5, you're going to see, number one, when it comes to this new skill set, man, you got to do the work. Do the work. Verse 5 answers the question, what reason is he talking about? Because in verse 5 he says, "But also for this very reason, giving all diligence." What's this reason he's talking about? Well, you got to go back to what Pastor Paul preached last Sunday night in verses 3 and 4. When he says, "His divine power has given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of him who called us by glory and virtue, by which we have been given to us exceedingly great and precious promises, that through these you may be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust." But also for this very reason. Did you see the reason? The reason you can live according to godliness and knowledge of God is because God's given you all that you need to do so. Do you notice that in verse 3 and 4? It emphasizes what God has given you. The reason you can be partakers of God's divine nature is because God has made you escape the corruption that is in this world. All right. So in other words, Christian, because God has given you what you need to grow in godliness, then work at it. Be diligent. Use what he's given you. Put the time in. Develop the skills. And then use those skills. You know what I think? And this has just been from my observation. So many Christians look at other more experienced and mature Christians and say, man, I just wish I had the passion that he has. I just wish I wanted to be at church all the time like she does. And I think what the inexperienced believer fails to realize is that those other Christians didn't always feel that way and don't always feel that way. There's a youth group song that we sang a few times when I was a teenager. One part of it said, if the grass is greener on the other side, it's only because they fed it and you let yours die. That's all I can remember. But that has stuck with me all these years. You know, you have a new creation within you. You're a new creature when you accept Christ. And if you feed the new creature, the things of God, you grow. If you starve it, you die. It's really as simple as that. What you feed grows, what you neglect dies, or at least weakens. Now, you as a new creature will never die spiritually, but you can sure grow weak. And I think a lot of new Christians or young Christians haven't yet realized these more experienced older Christians have just been feeding the new nature, and they've worked at it, and they've been diligent at it. And what you get is a mature Christian, okay? And you know, that's what I think a lot of people have got to come to grips with, that this takes diligence. Well, I never asked for this. Can somebody get me a little bit of water? I don't know why I'm getting hoarse, but we're going to try to get to the end of this. All right, so that's part one of here of this text. Do the work. But then part two is, okay, you got to identify the skills. What are the skills that God has given you to develop? And that's what this answers the question to. What are the skills? Well, let's look at this. First of all, again, verse 5 says, but also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue. And then the list goes on. You notice that? To virtue, knowledge, to knowledge, self-control, to self-control, onward and onward. Thank you. So when he says, add to your faith virtue, and then he starts piling these up, these skills should not be viewed as stages in the Christian walk. In other words, it's not as if, well, I'll get good at one skill. Once I got that one down, then I'll develop the next one, and I'll work through all these. That's not what this means. In verse 5, when he says, add to your faith virtue, and then the implication to your virtue, add knowledge, and so forth. The word add literally means supply. And the idea is this. As you grow in one area, don't hinder the natural result that follows in the next area. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that. So these skill set are not building blocks in which one is built on the other. They're more like a telescope, spyglass. As you pull the first section of faith out, what naturally follows behind it is diligence. Don't hinder it. Let it follow. And as that comes out, the next section is virtue. That naturally follows if you don't hinder it. I know you're trying to turn that heat off, aren't you, Brian? Heat's not on. And we already got windows. What kind of January is this, huh? I'm not complaining. So that's what this is. These skills will just come. As you grow in one, the next one will just follow if you don't hinder it. Another illustration is the tree. As the root takes grip into the ground, they produce what? The trunk, which naturally produces branches. And from the branches, you grow buds, and the buds turn into fruit. If you don't hinder any stage of the process, right? Just one just naturally follows the other. Well, listen, folks, this is how your godly skill set will grow if you work at it instead of hindering it. And you know, this process starts fast. Christians start to grow like weeds right away when they put work into this. Do you know that this church started because a whole bunch of young Christians just grew like weeds? And by the way, more on that starting next week when we look at the history of Open Door Baptist Church. Okay, so let's look at these skills. What are these skills? Well, back to verse 5. It starts with faith. It starts with faith. The faith that you exercise when you accepted Christ. Because he says, but also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith, don't hinder what comes from your faith, is what he's saying. He's talking about the faith that saved you. Because, folks, faith grows. Faith grows. You don't need vast amounts of faith to get saved. You just need to have faith that Christ died for you and rose for you. That faith grows. When I was a very young Christian, my teen years, I didn't understand this concept. I said, oh, you either have faith or you don't. Right? To say you have small faith is like, say you have a little faith is like saying you're a little bit pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not. That's what I thought. Well, no. Truth is, okay, you can be a little bit pregnant. That, ladies, is when nobody knows. Right? By the time you look like Amy Vare, you're a lot of bit pregnant. Right? It grows, and faith is the same way. The faith by which you were saved grows and gets bigger and larger and stronger within you if you don't hinder it, but instead feed it and work at it. And then he says, add to your faith, or don't hinder your faith, virtue. So on your faith, do not hinder virtue. Now, what is virtue? Well, this word virtue literally means moral excellence. It's a combination of two words, moral excellence. Moral. What is a moral? It's that which lines up with God's nature. Morals are that which line up with God's nature. Listen, because you bear the image of God when you were born, you don't acquire the image of God. You were born that way. It's what sets you apart from all the animals. Because you bear the image of God, you were born with morals. And the longer one lives without God, the more those morals get seared and hindered and destroyed. But you were born that way. See, I don't believe that a child has to be taught that stealing is wrong. I believe the morals are there. But the more a child grows in stealing and getting away with it and practicing the act of theft, the more that child's conscience gets seared and the more immoral that person grows to be. But the morals are there. Excellence. Remember, this is talking about moral excellence. Excellence is a pattern of consistent moral living. Perfection will not be reached in this life. You will be perfect when you're with the Lord. So perfection will not be reached now, but excellence can be. Because you can live a life that is a pattern of consistent moral living. That's within your grasp. So together, these words mean what we use in English, virtue, which simply means the fulfillment of a thing. Virtue is the fulfillment of a thing. That is, when something is doing what it's supposed to do, it's fulfilling its purpose. It is virtuous. I mentioned my grandfather's skills with a hammer this morning. He could drive a 3-inch nail with one tap and two drives at the most, and often just one. Do you know how I started driving nails when I was a kid? Okay, I would go tap, hit, miss, hit, miss, miss, hit, miss, hit, hit, miss, miss, hit. And after 20 hits, I drive a nail with little dents all around the woodwork. Okay? That is not what a hammer was designed to do. My grandpa developed the skill of using a hammer to do what it was designed to do. Well, when you live a pattern of moral living in your life, you will be virtuous. You'll be living a life for which God designed you to live. My grandfather rarely missed, now and again, because he wasn't perfect. But boy, he was virtuous with a hammer. And when you serve the Lord, you will not be sinless, but boy, you can be virtuous. That's a skill that just develops if you don't hinder it. Because he designed you to live that way. And then he says, and to virtue, do not hinder knowledge. Do you remember what Pastor Paul said? Knowledge is a key word to the book of 2 Peter. And there are different types of knowledge that come through in this book. In verse 2 and 3, Pastor Paul told us that the knowledge of those verses is that knowledge of, it's a full knowledge that is growing, okay? It's a knowledge that gets deep and grows more and more. Remember I shared with you that four-book series I've discovered that I really like for discipling? And the first one is The Milk for the New Christian. That's very basic. By the time you get to book 3, Bread for the Hungry Christian, it's an 8-week study in Christology, the study of Christ. It gets deep. And it's not so quick to answer the questions there. You have to think. And what you start to do is you develop a more full, deeper knowledge of Jesus Christ. Okay? Well, here in verse 5, this is not the kind of knowledge that Peter's talking about. In this verse, this knowledge is a practical working knowledge that results from that growing deep knowledge, but it's a practical knowledge. That's what this means, okay? Anybody know what this is? A what? It's a dovetail jig. Does anybody know what a dovetail jig is? Kathy? Yeah, some of you might have some bedroom furniture or even your kitchen drawers. You pull them out, you look at the side of the drawers, and they have dovetail joints that are triangular shaped, and they interlock, which makes for a very strong joint. So the front of the drawer, after years of pulling on it, doesn't just pull out. Okay? This is a jig that makes those. All right? I made this jig from one of my plans in one of my woodworking magazines, and it was very tricky to learn how to use, and I don't use it much. But when I made Naomi a chest of drawers, it had 6 drawers on it, and the first drawer was really tricky because my practical knowledge of this thing that I just made was not very good, and it took a few times of trial and error to know where to put the boards, how tight to tighten it down, where to put the router. And by the time I did a couple of those, I got into the groove, so to speak, and I was just ripping out one drawer after another, and those babies just fit perfect. Why? Because I developed a working knowledge of this tool. Well, that's exactly what Peter is saying you can do in verse 5. If you don't hinder it upon your virtue, your consistent moral living, you're just going to get a working knowledge of how to live for the Lord, of how to apply his word, and life will become very practical as you walk with Jesus. He won't be a part of your life. He'll be your life in everyday things and everyday thought processes. That's the kind of knowledge that grows if you don't hinder it. Then you move on to verse 6, and he says, unto your knowledge do not hinder self-control. Or if you have King James translation, it probably says temperance. And this simply means to control yourself instead of giving in to every whim, impulse, or temptation that crosses your path. That's what self-control is, okay? Watch a puppy. Puppies are hilarious. You know, they're going full bore after that ball until a butterfly passes it. Whoop! And man, you see those things just turn around. You know, nose for tail, chase the butterfly until a leaf blows the other way. And then back again. And you know, Christians live that way. And I wonder why there's no consistency in moral living. They haven't practiced self-control. Proverbs 16:32 says, "He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that rules his spirit than he that conquers a city." Paul often used the athlete as an example of temperance and self-control. Because even back then, the athlete knew he had to train his body, and he couldn't just eat whatever came down the pike. And that's what self-control is. Well, folks, if you don't hinder it, you'll grow in this area. And you'll learn to use this skill. And this skill of self-control will become commonplace. You won't give in to every whim or impulse that comes your way. Then he says, to self-control, do not hinder perseverance. Or some translations say patience. Now, what is that? That perseverance or patience, that's just the ability to endure tough circumstances. That's what it is. The ability to endure tough circumstances without just crumbling and falling apart. Whereas self-control is the ability to handle the pleasures of life, perseverance is the ability to handle the pains of life. You see how you need both skills to be consistent? Right? And I know, we hear this all the time, I'm afraid to ask for patience, because if I do, God is going to send me a trial in which to practice patience. Okay? Listen, Christian, you don't have to ask for patience. Because whether you ask or not, the trials are coming. God has promised you will have trials and tribulation because you know Jesus Christ as Savior. That's how God trains you. That's how God trains you. To get saved and hope you don't have any pain of trial is like joining a gym and hope you don't experience any pain in a workout. Well, I got my gym membership, but I'm not actually going to have to work out here, am I? Who would say that? But this is what Christians hope for. Listen, trials are not fun. They are painful, but they're coming. And when they do, you need only to practice the patience God has supplied you when they come. Don't hinder it. The patience is there. The ability to persevere and to go forth in the name of the Lord in spite of your pain is already within you, Christian. Just don't hinder it. Use it. And you will grow in it. And you can, because this is just one of the extensions of Christian living that God gave you. Perseverance. You have it, use it. Then he says in verse 6, he says to perseverance, do not hinder godliness. Do not hinder godliness. And I suppose the word reverence might also be a good translation of this word. Because what the word means is the idea of revering God, holding him to his rightful position. That's what godliness is. And it's a practical skill, not just an ideological one. Those of you who've been coming on Wednesday nights, looking at that list of respectable sins, sins that we as Christians tend to not consider sin in our lives and actually respect them. And we looked at one of those was the sin of ungodliness. Do you remember that? Ungodliness is to live your life as if God doesn't exist. So the reverse of that is to live godly by living your life as if God is always there, because he is. That's what godliness is. We do this when we don't compartmentalize and put God in a part of our life. Well, you know, I got work, and I got the family, and I got sports, and I got God. Right? No. When you're at work and playing sports or with your family or whatever you're doing, you do to the glory of God because he is over everything. See, that's how you live your life, not by compartmentalizing God and pulling him out when it's convenient, but by living your life as if God oversees all the parts of your life, because he does, whether you acknowledge him or not. When you acknowledge him as such, you're living godly, okay? And that will just grow. And then he goes into verse 7, and he says, on your godliness, do not hinder brotherly kindness. Brotherly kindness. And here we go again. Once again, you've seen that all of these skills up to this point have had to do with your relationship vertically with the Lord. And now he moves horizontally to your relationship with other people. Because you can only get it together with people around you when first you have it right with God above you. Right? So now your brotherly kindness, and this is the word, it's often translated love in the New Testament. It's the same word translated love in other sections, but it's not the word from which that comes from the Greek word agape. That's usually what we see translated love, right? That's not what we see here. This is the word Philadelphia, or as we say it, Philadelphia, okay? And this emphasizes not the action of love, but it emphasizes the feeling of love. So again, you want to know why that brother that you look up to is so feeling towards others, shows such brotherly kindness? Well, it may not be because it comes naturally to him, but because he developed that skill of sympathy by not hindering it. Now, I think Peter learned this one the hard way. Now, you think about Peter, who, when he was with the Lord, Peter was always looking out for number one. And Peter would throw you under a bus to save himself. This is the way he thought. This is the way he lived. He was arguing with the other disciples as to who would be first in the kingdom, and he was so sure it was him. Okay? And Peter was one of those, okay, well, enough about me. Let's talk about me for a while. And this is how he lived his life. And now he's telling us to not hinder the brotherly kindness or the love for others that is in you, because he has learned not to hinder this. This is a different man. This is a man who now loves people. And he's much slower to speak, much quicker to listen. That's what brotherly kindness does. That's what Philadelphia does. It puts others first. And says, let me put my issues aside. Let me take a moment and listen to you. Right? And he learned the skill. And you know, the feeling of brotherly love so often results in that sacrificial agape love. And if you notice, the very last skill in this skill set is verse 7. To godliness, brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness, do not hinder love. And that's the agape word. That means to seek the highest interest of someone else with the expectation of nothing in return. That's the kind of love he's talking about. Well, folks, this will flow from you if you don't hinder it. Now, loving people by your actions, not just by giving lip service. This is not natural to us in our sin nature, but you know, it is a natural skill of the new nature. And this applies to you. So skill development takes work. This takes effort. It's hard. It takes diligence. You know, Christian, God believes you can do this. So do I. But you have to choose to work at this and let these skills grow. You're saved from the penalty and the power of sin, are you not? So why go back into the prison of sin and make license plates and pound rocks? You got all you need in Christ to build and develop new skills, the skills of freedom, not the skills of bondage. You can do this. And of course, many of you are. And if you consider yourself one of those young Christians and you would like to be like those mature Christians that are around you, well, you're already on your way. If you've submitted to the Lord, these skills will grow. It's worth the effort. It's worth the work.